Great to have your company on this Wednesday, April the 14th, and we've been looking forward to this for a long, long time. Wispy, the Masters always gets you in a, I don't know, nostalgic mood. We sat and watched that great tournament play out, and it was a great winner for the first time. A Japanese golfer wins it, and then you go back through the history of it, and this man is as much a part of it as anyone, and this is royalty. This is golfing, or no, it's not even golfing, it's sporting royalty we're about to speak to. 9 majors, 3 Masters. Widely regarded as one of the greatest golfers of all time. He won 167 times from the professional circuit, and he joins us live from Palm Beach in Florida. Welcome to you, Mr. Gary Player.
Oh, is that Gary?
It is. It is.
Well, Sam, tell your mum and dad they were smart. They knew how to pick a right name.
I've got 2 R's in my name, though, Gary, so I'm not sure what that means.
Well, listen, if I could be back in Australia, I'd put 2 R's in there because I love that country so much. And I miss Oz so much, I can't tell you, mate. It just drives me crazy that I don't go back there anymore. Such wonderful memories, starting off at Darwin, working our way down to Alice Springs and to all over Young and all over Melbourne and Sydney and Wagga Wagga. You name it, man, what a time I had. And my 7 Australian Open are such a triumph of, I cherish my Australian Open victories.
7 times, you must have loved the place. We know you had this beautiful, large family of yours. I'm not sure whether you brought them down to you. You were maybe too young in 1958 when you first won at Kionga, but of the 7, which was your favourite?
Oh, you know, when I won at Kionga, and it's still Australian Open record today, Gary, which is really, I don't understand it. I don't know whether it's luck or what. But, you know, with all the modern-day equipment compared to what we played with, no records last very long. But I shot 62 the first day, and Nicholas shot 66. So we came back to the hotel. He says, how the hang can I shoot 66 and be 4 behind? He says, I'm going to get your little South African butt tomorrow. So the next day, he shoots 63, and I shoot 70. We came back, I said, how can I have an average of 66 and be 3 behind you? I said, tomorrow I'm going to get your big, fat American butt. And when I was on the 10th hole, I was 10 under par for the round, and his caddy came running from another tee and says, Mr. Nicholas wants to know what you're scoring today. I said, 10 under. He said, no, not for the tournament, for today. Oh, so Nicholas sees me 2 holes later. He says, you're a liar, man. You're not 10 under. Well, I was. And I shot another 62. Jeez. And won the Australian Open. And the most deflating moment of my life, I'm in the airport. I'm so pumped up. And I've got that Australian Open medal in my pocket. And I've got white pants on, a red shirt, a yellow jacket. And this old lady comes up to me with a walking stick. She says, excuse me, sir, you're the bus driver. Where do I get the ticket to go downtown? I said, ma'am, here's my medal. You can have my medal and I'll steal it. I'll steal a bus for you.
Gary, that is a great...
You know what I said? You know what I said? I said, strike me pink, mate.
That is a great story. That is a great story. Hey, Gary, you touched on, or Gary, my partner here, Gary, touched on the fact that you travelled around the world often with your 6 children. What was it like back in the day? We know that a lot of golfers now have private jets and that type of thing. Was it fun travelling like that?
It was. Of course, you make things fun. You can make things lousy, you can make things fun. The only thing that wasn't fun about it, with 6 children, I had to win the tournament to break even.
Exactly right. That's a costly exercise.
They all ate like it was the Last Supper, and I was hoping it would be the Last Supper.
Hey, you have got a lot of charisma, but you've described Arnold Palmer as somebody that would fall out of bed with charisma, and I've heard. And yes. Listen to you talk about the man, and I know you loved him and you had great respect for him. What was it about him and the way that he changed golf back in the day?
Well, he had an army behind him, and the thing that people revered about him, he was in the tree, and if there was a 5-foot gap in the trees, he'd take out a 3-iron and try and hit it through. You couldn't hit it with a rifle, but he tried it with a golf club. Whereas Nicholas, who was the better player by a long way, would chip out on the side and try and get a par the hard way. So, but he also had great patience with people. He wouldn't leave until he'd signed for everybody. A lot of the players I've seen, they sign autographs, they walk by the kids, they don't stop. Not a lot, but you see this. And a guy like that should be really stopped and given a good speaking to, because if it wasn't for the public, we wouldn't be playing for the money that they're playing for today. Can you imagine? Mm. In the Masters this year, he won over $2 million. When I won, in fact, the guy who finished 10th won more money than I made in my three victories.
Wow.
My top 10, 14 times, the most number of cuts and the most number of times at the Masters, he made more than me. I won 40,000 for my victory, 2020. I made 60,000, maybe another 50 for the other victories, or four top 10, 14 cuts. But we didn't play for the money. We wanted to win the Masters, and it's always been tough to win the Masters. It's not tougher today than it was when we played. When we played, we had 59 major champions playing the tour. They have wonderful golfers playing today. Prior to that, you had the best players that ever lived, Ben Hogan and Sam Snead. Mm. Nobody was ever as good as those guys. So, you know, it's been a wonderful journey, and I've traveled more miles than any human being ever now. Not athlete, human being. I mean, I was not from Sydney to Melbourne, man. I was like Sydney to America, South Africa, America, stopping four times, no jets. Six kids flying at 27,000 feet amongst the storm.
Hey, Gary, I bet you none of those players in the Masters slipped on the beach like you did in one of your very first tournaments. I love that story. I thought it was – Matt, could you share it with our audience? Because you talk about today's players being pampered and get hotels and suites. You were having a kip on the beach.
Oh, man, I tell you, I couldn't get a room. And I had £200 in my pocket. My dad was dead poor. £200 in my pocket. I go to the first hotel. They want £90. I go, oh, Lord, he's bad. So I couldn't find a hotel. So I went down to the beach, and the sand dunes there. It was a beautiful night. And we're going to do that again. Nick Felder's got an idea. We're going to go and relive that at the British Open when we go to St. Andrews. Except I get a cup of coffee there. But anyway, the next day I go and try and find a room, and I find a room for 10 shillings and sixpence. There wasn't any curtains in it. The key was so small that when I put the key in the keyhole, the window broke. And honestly, the roof was so low that the mice were hunchbacked. But anyway, I think... but then I get on the... Just to add insult to injury, I get on the first tee, and I'm really pooping myself. I'm so nervous at St. Andrews, the home of golf. The first fairway, Ray Charles couldn't miss. But anyway, I get up, and the starter says, play away, laddie. So I hit this damn little hook, and it comes to, oh, no, man. It hit the out-of-bounds fence and came back in, thank goodness. And I was going to get my tee. You see, we always picked up our tees in those days, and we picked up our opponents as well, because we paid a penny a tee, which is equivalent to probably 20 cents a tee now. Anyway, as I'm walking away, he says, hey, laddie, come here a minute. What's your name? I said, my name's Gary Player, sir. And he says, where are you from? I said, I'm from South Africa. And he says, and what would your handicap be? I said, no, I'm a pro. He says, you're a pro? He says, you must be a hell of a chipper and putter, laddie. So I see the guy, I come back 3 years later, and I'm the youngest guy to ever win the British Open. And he sees me, and he slaps his forehead. He says, oh, this is a mirage. he says, in fact, it's a bloody miracle. So I take him in, and I buy him a wee drummer, a little whiskey, and we had a good laugh together, because I love to laugh, as you can see. Yeah. And you guys love to laugh. Well done, man. Keep you young. I'm 85 years young. I'll kick your guys' asses in the gym.
How many crunches have you done this morning?
500 this morning.
Oh, that is extraordinary. Hey, Garrett, there are so many things that we would like to talk to you about, but I watched an old interview that you did with Charlie Rose, and you talked about the time that you met Elvis Presley. Could you tell that story for us this morning?
Well, I went to Masters in 1961, and they asked me to go on Good America, Good Morning America or something else, And we're talking, and the lady says, "Now, what do you like besides golf?" I said, "Give me that guitar there." We say guitar, but I said, "Give me that guitar here." She was next to it. I said, "You can do anything, but don't step on my blue suede shoes." So Elvis sees it. He sends me a telegram, and he says, "I want to meet you." I said, "I want to meet you, King." So I'm on my way to L.A., and I get down to Hollywood, and I go in where he's doing the movie called Hawaii. And as I get in there, he sees me. He says, "Cut." He goes and put on a jacket, very well-mannered guy, comes out. He wants to play golf. He's got a club in his hand. He had a grip like he was driving a Harley-Davidson motorcycle. And the worst-looking grip I ever saw. Looked like a cow giving birth to a roll of barbed wire. Anyway. He says, "What's important?" "Well, I can't imitate it." I said, "Elvis, you've got to use your hips." He says, "The hips." He says, "Baby, you talking to the right man. Enjoy the city."
Could he hit a golf ball or not, Gary? Could he end up hitting it?
No, we were inside a studio. I don't know if he would ever hit a golf ball. But isn't it a tragedy that a man gave so much pleasure in the world died at 42 with cotton picking drugs?
Yeah.
Man alive. I pray that young people would stay off that crap, man.
Yes.
You ruin your whole life and your body. Your body's a holy temple. Look after it, man.
Yours is the holiest of temple. I watched all of your stuff, and you're in amazing condition. You love challenging people to sit up competitions and push up competitions. I love that. But also, Gary, you would be well aware that Australia's a great cricketing nation, and as is South Africa. And you are also a cricketer of great note.
Well, I wouldn't say great note, but at school I got full honours for cricket and rugby and soccer, and got half honours for athletics and springboard diving. Like Australia, we had wonderful preparatory and high schools with great facilities. And, you know, with the hard life of my mother dying when I was 9 and my father is working down a gold mine, not making £100 a month, and my brother's at war at 17 and my sister's at boarding school, an hour and a half to school and back. I'd come back, have to iron my own clothes, wash my clothes, prepare my food, and I lay in bed every night of my life there crying, wishing I was dead. Well, that was the greatest gift that was bestowed upon me, man. That's what made me become a world champion and have a heart full of love and a heart full of gratitude and determination and a will to win and never feel sorry for yourself and have respect and love for people.
You took 7 wickets in that cricket, and your story, your messaging is just unbelievable. And you had a bat. You had a Don Bradman signed bat, and you said you lost it.
I can you believe it? And Sir Don, every year went up to Adelaide, I'd see him, and I had a lot of second-hand gloves, were virtually new. And he came up to me and he said, "Gazza, I need some of those gloves, man." And I'd always give him a handful of gloves. I get a signed cricket bat and I lose it, damn it. I could have sold it for $1 million now for my charity.
You could. You were saying...
I was going to send him an SMS. I was going to send him an SAS to send me another one.
Well, speaking of your charity, one of your stated aims, which I loved, you said you wanted to raise $1 billion for your various charities, and you said, whilst you're upright and breathing, you'll get there. And I don't think, I wouldn't be arguing against you.
I don't think we'll reach that now, but we've raised a lot of money. But the most important thing is we built aid centres with sponsors in China. We built a home for homeless with all the sophisticated equipment. Interesting, guys. They were all calling these people bums sleeping under the streets. And we built this, and they now have come in there, a lot of them, and they're doctors and lawyers as such. In South Africa, I built churches and schools for blacks. I was president of our PGA. I said I'd resign if they didn't put 2 blacks on the committee. They didn't. So I resigned. I spent 3 years with my great father, Nelson Mandela. We raised almost 20 million rand for young black children. He was one of my heroes, as Martin Luther King, Mahatma Gandhi, and Churchill. That would be my all-time four ball. Of course, none of them could play, so I could beat them. But honestly, I mean, golf has been this incredible game. I mean, the friends I've made, and you know, I'm able to change millions of people's lives. What a gift!
Yeah.
What a gift bestowed upon me. And the second biggest gift I had was getting the Medal of Freedom in America, the biggest honor that can be bestowed upon you. And you know, it's interesting. Donald Trump, President Trump, gave me the award, and there were people by the thousands tweeting that I was a racist.
Crazy.
That's because I voted for Donald Trump. And I mean, in the meantime, it was an American award, first invented and started by President Kennedy. But people are so mean nowadays. They all think they're pressmen and women, you know?
Yeah,
they are.
We must never let the hatred overcome the love. If you cannot take the heat, get out of the kitchen.
Exactly, Gary. And I just wish you were here in the studio with us and you could read some of it. We have like a text machine, so people text us messages while we're doing interviews. And the love for you and the respect for you that's coming through loud and clear is extraordinary. It'd be lovely for you to be sitting here reading all these beautiful, kind things that people are saying about you this morning.
You know, honestly, I'm not kidding you. I've got a tear in my eye at the moment. I'm very much a baby. I'm tough on the golf course, and in a fight, I'd be tough. But honestly, you know, I loved Australia. I'm honest to goodness, I'm getting very choked. I loved Australia so, 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 so much. Playing exhibitions for $25 or £25 in those days for a game, traveling with no shirt on in the heat all over the country, playing in places where they had cracks in the fairways and a little corrugated tin clubhouse, and you'd hit the ball on the first hole out of bounds and they'd clap like hell like you just won the Masters. And I stayed in the club and danced with the members, the ladies there. Oh, I never married an Australian chick, I don't know. You know, it would have been a great thing if I could have had a wife in every country. But the only problem is then you have a mother-in-law in every country.
Gary, can I just say this, and I want to back Tim up. Yeah. We've been doing radio and media in various forms for a long time, and we've been very lucky and fortunate to speak to and interview some great people. But I have not enjoyed myself more than I have for the last 20-odd minutes. It's been an absolute pleasure and a joy and a delight. We only wish and hope that one day you could find your way back to Australia, and if we could spend some time within the studio, it would be one of our great career highlights. It's been a pure joy.
Well, thank you. There was one of my clubs that I loved in. I said, listen, I'd love to have my ashes spread in Australia on that golf course. He said, this is a golf course, not a cemetery, mate. So you've got no chance.
Well, let's hope that doesn't happen for a long, long time, Gary. And we thank you so much for joining us.
By the way, just as a conclusion, if I did spread my ashes there, the wind would come up and blow them out of bounds.
Gary, we must do this again. It's been a joy. Thanks so much for joining us.
My love to all my Australian mates. Take care.
Gary Flay.
Unbelievable.
We'll take a break and we can come back and talk about that, because that is, well, for us little humble people here, is a career highlight, having spoken to that great man.